Good afternoon, everyone. My name is Paul Weber. I'm calling in from the British colony, sometimes known as Canada. And my only job today is to welcome you to this teleclass and thank you for participating in the Voices of the IPS teleclass for 2010, and then to turn the floor over to President Martin Kiernan for him to chair the balance of the session. Over to you, Martin.
Thanks very much, Paul. As ever, we're really grateful to you and Weber Training for hosting these teleclasses for us. For those of you using Paul's website for the first time, do have a good look at his library section, because you'll see there's an enormous selection of past teleclasses that are available for you to listen to and download the handouts on. And don't forget, if you're unable to get to conference this year in Bournemouth, you still will be able to sign up for two of the free lectures that will be coming and beamed live from conference if you're unable to get there, or if we're lucky, we've closed for registration again. Anyway, moving on to my first slide, just a very brief update for a couple of moments that, you know, we're a society that is still very active and is still growing. Our membership now stands at in excess of 1,850 people. Our corporate members have recognised the value of joining us, and there are about 45 corporate members now of the society. Reflected on the size of our exhibition last year, I think, at conference. We're, as I said, a very active society. We do get involved in shed guidance. I think I've just about finally mastered the ability to send out emails to members with requests for comments, and very heartened by the number of comments we're getting back. I've had over 70 for some of the recent consultations, and this does help us shape the guidance that we will then be practicing by. And to me, I think there's a real benefit for our membership from being able to A, see the guidance early, but B, shape it. So that's quite useful. We are continually evolving society. You're going to hear some of the exciting developments we've got planned and have been working on for some time over the next hour. But we've recently introduced the first new branch for probably about 20 years in the East of England branch, which has been set up in an enormous geographical area. Quite remote, and the members there wanted their own branch and went to see them, and we managed to set that up. We have new groups. The mental health group is now becoming established. I think the date of that is in my latest bulletin, which you should be seeing land on your desks at the beginning of next week. And I hope members will think that we do listen to them, and you've seen calls recently go out for interest in a commissioning group where people can get together and discuss the issues that are affecting infection control practitioners working in commissioning, because it's a completely different field, which isn't really acute or primary care based, but a completely different slant on things. And we'll be discussing the setting up of that group at this weekend's consultative committee and board meetings on Friday and Saturday, so we'll be able to give you a bit more update about that. So I hope you'll feel that we are an active and listening society, and without further ado, we'll move on to hearing from other members of the board and other groups about what's going on. And it's a great pleasure first to introduce Heather Loveday, who is Deputy Editor of the Journal of Infection Prevention. Heather's going to be doing two slots for us, and here's her first session on about the Journal of Infection Prevention. Welcome, Heather.
Thank you. Hello, everybody. I'm going to spend my short time this afternoon really talking about the journal and how we want to get it to evolve over the next 2 to 5 years. Many of you will remember the journal as BJIC and its renaming about a year ago. And the aims of the journal really are very much around advancing practice within our own specialty. But it is the journal of the IPS members, and therefore it's really important that IPS members become involved in it and help to grow the journal in the way that we'd like to. The editorial board is fairly broad brush in terms of it has members from the society itself and also advisors from microbiology, pharmacy, and from public health and dental practice in order to help us get across messages to the broad membership that we're now trying to attract. Currently have a vacancy, and there will be an advert going out for that vacancy to be filled, so if anyone's interested in joining the journal and helping to shape it over the next few years, applications would be really welcomed. You move on to the next slide. We're actually looking at the fact that in the last 2 years we've grown the number of manuscript submissions that come into the journal significantly, and that's been partly because of our move to Sage Publications, who are very professional publishers on behalf of the journal, and their ability to actually attract and run a very tight ship in terms of manuscript submissions. One of the things we'd like to do is try and broaden the scope of the journal, and over the next year or so you'll start to see some new features within the journal, some of which will be similar to those that we've had in the past around practice, but also things that perhaps give the opportunity for people who've never thought of writing before to do so. You move to the next slide. There are two very short new JIP features which you'll actually see in our May issue, which is about 2 weeks away. The first is photo surveillance, and I'm sure everybody has this bank of photographs where they snap the corridors and corners of their institutions, and they tell stories far better than words. And what we're looking at is being able to use some of those photographs with a critical commentary of around 200 to 300 words that explains what's going on, perhaps raises some points for people to respond to in terms of letters, and raises awareness of perhaps issues that are common to many people. The second feature you will already have seen in March's issue is Ipsos, which is an And Finally column, and this is a comment column, and at the moment it's written by one of the members of the editorial board who seems to be prolific in his ability to actually locate and find things that actually will help us to think a little more critically and perhaps laugh a little at some of the things that come under the umbrellas of infection prevention. But again, it's very much a case of us wanting people to contribute to that particular column, and we'd very much welcome items from members of the society of around 100 to 150 words that actually help us to see the lighter side of the work that we do. Moving on to my last slide, I suppose I just really want to emphasise that it is your journal, and what we really want you to do is to get involved. Clearly, one way you can become involved is actually to write for the journal. Many of you have original pieces of work that you've been involved in terms of educational programs or within your own workplace. All of you, I know, have very much been involved in improving infection prevention practice in your areas. And you also have vast experience in terms of surveillance and the things that you learn from those surveillance reports. All of those are really welcomed in the journal. We'd like you to respond to the papers that are published in a letter to the editor. Keep it civil, if please. Act as peer reviewers or support a novice author. So if you are actually an author yourself and you'd like to become a peer reviewer, or you have a little bit of time where you could add support to someone new to writing, that we can actually assist those to actually submit some presentations, that would be really good. We need intelligence gatherers. We need people to actually tell us what they would like to read, what things they think we could actually put into themed issues. And again, those can actually go to the editor at ips.uk.net. And suggest people we might approach to commission reviews or other manuscripts. This last point is really important to us over the next 3 to 5 years as we try to develop the journal to attract an impact factor, which means that we'll be able to attract a lot of high-quality manuscripts to the journal and challenge some of our sister journals within the field, such as the Journal of Hospital Infection and the Journal of Infection Control. That's the last slide from me on this.
I think we can see there's plenty going on with the journal, and I think the last few points are well made. Many of us will go to other meetings, other conferences, see pieces of work that are well presented, you know, new pieces of novel work. But maybe we could approach these folk who are presenting this new work to say, well, how about publishing even as a small report in the journal as a first step? Because there's a lot of innovative work going on out there that sometimes only appears as a poster at a meeting and never goes any further. So I think great opportunity for us. Thanks very much, Heather. Without further ado, we'll move on to our Pat Cattini, who's going to be talking about Conference 2010 at Birmingham. Pat's a senior nurse down at the Royal Brompton in London, but a member of the Scientific Programme Committee, and those of you who heard the preamble will know she has no mute button, so we'll see how she gets on with this bit here.
As Martin said, my name's Pat Cattini, and I'm on the Scientific Programme Committee, and we're responsible for pulling together the programme for the annual showcase conference. Next slide. Last year's conference was really 3 days of education, information and entertainment, and the event was literally a sellout. As you can see, nearly 1,000 people visited in one capacity or another, with over 93% rating us as good and very good. The next slide shows some of the feedback that we had from delegates who attended at Infection Prevention 09, and as you can see, they were very positive about the whole experience. It was particularly good to note that the feedback was equally positive from the new attendees, as well as those of us who have been around for a bit longer, shall we say. And it is a great networking opportunity. I think that was very well recognised. Moving on the next slide, you can see that this year's conference will be held at Bournemouth International Conference Centre, and the dates are the 20th to the 22nd of September. Again, the 3 days are themed around the underpinning IPS ethos to inform expert practice, promote excellence in infection prevention, and sustain systems for patient safety. Moving on, we have two particularly important lectures. We have the Aliff Lecture, which is named after Graham Aliff, Emeritus Professor of Microbiology, pioneer of modern infection control, and as far as I'm concerned, all-round great man. And this year's lecture is on preventing and controlling ESBLs, and that will be presented by Professor Hilary Humphreys from Dublin. We also have the E.M. Cotterill Lecture, and that's named after the first infection control nurse who was appointed in Torquay back in 1959. And this year's lecture is the evolving role of epidemiology in infection prevention. And that's going to be given by Professor Jackie Riley, who has a nursing background and is now a consultant epidemiologist at Health Protection Scotland. The next slide details some of the many and varied subjects that are going to be covered at Infection Prevention 2010. The two that particularly caught my attention are the use of storytelling, because I particularly like that, and I'm very intrigued by the use of positive deviance in infection prevention, so I'm personally particularly looking forward to listening to those two. And we have confirmed speakers coming from far and wide, as you'll see on the next slide, including several from the United States, Mark Rupp, John Lloyd, and Professor John Boyce. We've got Wing Commander Andy Green coming from the UK services, Professor Alison Holmes, and many other infection prevention practitioners from the UK. So I think there'll be plenty to listen to. Moving on again, another big highlight will be our first question time, and this is going to be with the five nurse leads from the five countries. And the idea behind this is it will give you the opportunity to quiz our great leaders about the policies which are going to shape our future. Little after the election, unfortunately, but still a good opportunity. We've also got the IV track again, a whole day around IV therapy, and we've got the drop-in sessions for care home staff. And if that's not enough, we've also got a very big exhibition, probably the biggest yet, with over 200 exhibitors. And don't forget as well that the conference will carry 16 CPD points, which you can use in your personal portfolios. Of course, it's not all work at the Infection Prevention 2010, and for your delight and entertainment, we have a Fun of the Fair evening, and that will be on the Monday night, and on the Tuesday, we have the gala dinner, and this year, I think we celebrate 40 years since the start of the society as ICNA originally. So, for more information and book your place, go to the website, the ips.uk.net website. There's an early bird price for those of you who can get a booking in before the 5th of June. And please think about submitting an abstract. If you're working on a project that you'd like to share with a wider audience, we'd be really keen to hear from you. And it's the ideal event to share a poster or present a free paper. And even if it's your first time, there are plenty of us there to give you support. So in conclusion, the SPC, we've been working hard to make sure that you have a really enjoyable conference experience, and we hope to see you there on 20th September in Bournemouth. So thank you.
We'll introduce Karen Hawker now, who's the representative today for the IPS IT group, and she's going to talk about the really innovative work on the quality improvement tools. Karen.
Hello. Yeah, these tools are almost a follow-on from the 2004 and 2005 initiatives we had to develop audit tools. They're going to be more far-reaching, and they're being developed in a, with grants from various departments of health. The idea is that they will be very much functional on the IT. You're going to be able to develop your reports and that online or on your computer systems, and you won't have to type out reports anymore. Moving on to the first screenshot, there are two types of tool, and there are two levels of tool. The normal tool is what's called an environmental tool, and the clinical tool would be around clinical practice. Rapid improvement tool is the shortish version, and the process improvement tool is the full version, although there will be room to customise these tools as you go. Moving on to the next slide, there's a list of the environment tools available, and as you can see, they cover several different areas, and hopefully areas that aren't covered, you will be able to customise them when you have access on the computer in order to develop your own tools. Moving on to the next slide, the clinical practice tools, you have they cover most of the high impact interventions, and you can see there are short and long hand hygiene tools available, as well as technique and environment tools. Moving on to the next slide, in order to enter data, you have to develop your property list. This is one of the most difficult parts of using the tool, but once it's done, it's done. So once you've got all of your properties on, once you've got all of your directorates on and your wards and or your clinics or whatever it is you're going to use, you'll be able to go back in and use those lists again. So it's quite onerous to get it done all in the first place, but once it's done, it's done. You can then use those to input. And the next slide shows the type of reports that are the next slide shows a blank tool. So what you can do is you can either download the tool that you're using onto a PDA, take it around and just tick your answers in, or else you can print it out as a blank piece of paper, as this tool shows in this slide, and tick it and then go back and enter it using your normal desktop computer. Moving on to the next slide, this is the data entry screen, and you can see that you have several options. You can actually opt to see if you have short questions to look at or long ones. You can opt to have the guidances on which each question is based on shown or not shown as you're entering the data, and you can opt to have comments either for every question or for only questions that answer no, and you can also opt that if you don't enter anything, it will actually default to yes. Now, a lot of it is designed that ward staff or clinical staff will be able to do these audits for you, so you can give them access to them, which is why there's the area with the guidance, so they can see why you're asking those particular questions. Moving on to the next slide, this shows what it's like when you actually do the data entry. So it actually asks particular yes and no questions. These are the short questions. Right, moving on to the next slide, this is the reports page. So when you have finished doing your data entry, you can actually raise some reports. You can opt to either one report at a time or several, and you can compare them to each other. If you do a single report, you can raise a report like the one shown on the next slide. Now, the password at the front, that is for your clinical staff. So they, once you've sent them the report, they can go in back into the program, enter the password, and they can actually put an action plan in place, so they can actually answer questions on the action plan online, which is then returned back to you as the administrator. The next slide shows the hard copy report, which can be sent out. So that's raised as a PDF. So you can tell the program that you want a hard copy report. It will send you a PDF. You've got a score for the audit at the top, and also a score for the question set. And it is RAG rated. So any questions that are yeses and nos come out red and green. And at the end of the day, you will get a red, amber, and green report. Moving on to the next slide, this is a summary of reports. So it tells you how many reports you've done up to a certain date, and how many functional areas have been assessed. The next slide shows a comparison of a month-by-month audit. So if staff have done their own audits, you can see how the scores have changed and people can follow their progress. The next slide shows another comparison of how people progress and their changes in score. And then the final slide is another level of report. And I'd like to hand back to Martin now. Thank you.
Thank you, Karen. Looking at the tools, you can probably have worked out by now the enormous amount of work that's gone into the production of these and the huge variety of tools that are usable. Our original remit wasn't really to produce anything other than a set of acute tools, but it became apparent that there is such a need for tools in the non-acute setting that we moved on to work on the care home setting as well. We have the support and grateful support from all the departments of health, and particularly Carol Fry has been a stalwart in supporting this process at the Department of Health in England, but we have had the engagement of all the other countries, so this will be countrywide. Where we're at the moment is ensuring that we can slightly modify the tools so that it fits with the local guidance in each of the countries, because there's no point in us producing a set of tools just for England and then not being applicable in all of the other countries. So we have engagement in all of the other countries to make sure that that process is robust. There is a testing process going on with the IT side of things at the moment in about 15 hospitals. Karen did mention it's going a little bit of hard work at the beginning, setting up all the wards, departments, etc. But actually, if your organisation is using credits for cleaning, then a lot of that will have been set up for you, because our system is based on that system. So you'll have a head start in that. So I hopefully you'll find it incredibly useful. I'm particularly impressed with the fact that people locally will be able to input information, and other people, and you can set user access, will be able to access the report. So the whole thing is not going to be over to you, infection prevention control team, you run the whole process. You'll be able to devolve it out, and levels of access you can define locally to make this very useful. So I really hope that people are going to find this useful. There are, for care homes, many of them won't have access to PDAs, etc., maybe possibly not even computers to do this, but they will be able to print off printed versions of it, and we are thinking of offering, or likely to offer a hosting service on our website for care homes that maybe want to join as members, and we would consider hosting their data for them. Only they'll be able to access it, of course, in order to provide a better service to people. So I think you can see there's an enormous variety of tools. They're very customizable. We went for this particular form of software so that people can actually use it to create other tools that they find will be useful to them. The only thing I will tell you is that although the software will come for nothing, if you're going to want support from PS Management, who are the software developers, that I'm afraid you'll have to arrange for yourself, and I don't think you would expect any difference. So it's been very exciting. I know the gestation period is very long. That's been delayed for a variety of reasons, not least the pandemic of flu, which threw everything up into the air. And we're really hoping to have these out to you as soon as we possibly can now. But I would guess that we're looking for a formal launch in September at conference. If we can get them out before that, then we will issue them before that. But we will probably have also look to holding some drop-in hands-on sessions at conference so people can actually come along and get used to using them with members of our IT group who have been so instrumental in setting up the IT side of things. So if you have questions about the tools and any other questions about anything you've heard today, please contact your local branch coordinator, because we'll be meeting with all of them at the weekend on Saturday anyway, and it'd be great to have some feedback. So with that further ado, we'll move on to our next session, and it's a pleasure to welcome back Heather Loveday. And Heather this time is going to be wearing her research and development hat, and she's going to be talking about the exciting R&D agenda within the IPS. Welcome back, Heather.
Thank you. What I'm hoping I'll be able to concentrate on in the next few minutes is just bringing you up what we've actually... Can you hear me?
I can hear you, Heather, yeah.
Okay. What we've been working on over the last 2 to 3 years, and we're coming to the end of a strategy which was developed in 2005. It was a 5-year strategy, so 2010 is where we've come to an end, and we're about to start redeveloping that research strategy in line with the society's new strategy. And two of the really key things that we were intent on doing when we set out on this plan 5 years ago was actually trying to develop a framework for building research capacity within the society and establishing a research agenda for the society where members of the society could actually input into through active research as well as the use of research in practice. The membership of the group, if you look at the next slide, is now absolutely full in terms of our membership. We have a representative in every branch with the exception of Northern Ireland, and I'm hoping we'll soon get a branch member from there. And as Martin mentioned, the newly identified branch in East of England, and I'll be going up there to talk to them later in the spring and trying to get a member from that branch. This means that you all have access in your branches to someone who is on the group and is able to advise you locally on research initiatives, any questions you might have that you want to develop into research initiatives, or also to bring things back to the group that you'd actually like the IPS R&D group to identify as part of their priorities for the next strategy. Just to remind you, if you look at the next slide, our strategy actually focuses on 4 key issues: increasing the nursing multidisciplinary contribution to infection prevention and control, influencing local and national policy, and we've been very good at doing that over the last 5 years. We have members who are part of policy development groups in England. Our membership have input into research and development initiatives locally, and that's been a fairly successful part of the strategy and one that we want to build on. In terms of building capability and capacity, part of our early work was actually finding out what we currently had in terms of capability and capacity. But that led us to actually develop the research awards, which were launched last year and which I'll come to in a minute, in order to try and continue to build that and provide some little support for people wishing to become active in their research role. And the fourth, if you like, strut of the strategy is actually disseminating evidence-based and innovative practice. And we try and do that through two critical approaches within the society, one being the Scientific Programme Committee and through conference presentations, and the other being through the Journal of Infection Prevention. If we move to the next slide, part of the work was actually setting our research and development priorities, which we reported last year at conference. And they really focus on 3 key issues: making things better for patients and their families, providing an evidence base for policy and practice, and making sure that, if you like, government masters are informed about what's important in terms of practicing infection prevention, and also that the gaps in the knowledge that we have inform research policy in terms of identifying where money should be spent in actually increasing the evidence base. The third point is using research to innovate and improve infection prevention and control. And that, if you like, is the sort of development element of it, the translational element of our strategy. And that's been really, I think, important in the last 3 to 4 years in terms of helping national programs improve infection prevention and control ownership locally and nationally. We move on to the next slide, just to let you know that last year's annual research and development awards actually made awards totaling £11,000. We made two awards, a collaborative small projects award, which was given to Diane Tomlinson and the team from Birmingham Heartlands, who are looking at the use of ATP and Clostridium difficile. And then a postdoctoral research award, which was awarded to Dr. Karen Lee from the University of Dundee, who's looking at an educational intervention for hand hygiene. Our novice researcher award, we were not able to make an award, but that is not necessarily that much of a problem, and we hope this year to be able to make that award for applications which actually be called for in May. There'll be a call in the Journal of Infection Prevention for those to be awarded by December this year. Moving on to the next slide, just to highlight that in terms of disseminating research and innovation, this has had a huge impact on the number of free papers and posters that actually go into our conference. And I would really urge you, if you have work that you want to share with your colleagues, to actually look at the program website and put in an abstract for either a free paper, an oral presentation, or a poster presentation. Last year, our poster presentations filled the whole of the Harrogate Centre, from the presentation rooms to the exhibition, and it was fantastic to see the amount of work that members are actually undertaking and wanting to share with their colleagues. If you look at the next slide, you can see some of the examples of that, and if you've never done this before, you need a little bit of help, you want some guidance. If you check with your local R&D lead or myself, I'd be happy to help you put together and submitting an abstract for conference. The closing date for submissions is in mid-June, and the sooner you get your submission in, the better. Moving on to the next slide, I'm going to go back to my first presentation and encourage you that you should then write up your presentations for the Journal of Infection Prevention. Again, I just want to reiterate, this is your journal, and it's really important that we manage to share as widely as possible the really good work that our institutions in the UK. And that's my final slide.
Thank you very much, Heather, and I love the way you neatly managed to get in another plug for the journal. It's brilliantly done. To me, that was the most heartening thing of conference last year, looking at all the excellent posters. And there are other meetings I go to mainly to have a look at the posters, because that's where you see some of the most creative work, where people have got a small idea and sometimes they don't publish it elsewhere, and I think that's a really welcome and interesting thing to do. And, I mean, I'd love to get to the stage like the big American meetings where if you want to go and see a poster, there's only a certain time slot it's actually allowed to be displayed for. The quality and the number is such, so that's really excellent news. So thank you very much for that, Heather. It's disappointing this year that we weren't able to actually award the Novice Researcher Award, and I think there must be plenty of people out there who have an idea and who want to take it forward but don't really quite know how to do it, and we're only too happy to support people in doing that, because there's still plenty of scope for development of other. I think that's probably the tactful way of putting it, in infection prevention and control. There are three journals worldwide that really publish most of the infection prevention and control literature. There's an opportunity, I think, for us to make inroads, well, not inroads, but to create a niche for ourselves in that market in publishing good information, and I think it's up to us to make it happen ourselves. Developing that thing from research and education, we now move on into the education and professional development side of things. Huge pleasure to introduce, and not that she needs any introduction, Jean Lawrence to you. Now, Jean, as you know, is a past chair of the ICNA. In her semi-retirement, she's been more active for the society than many people who are still in full-time work. She's currently the secretary of the Education and Practice Development Committee. And Jean's going to be talking to us for a few minutes about the competency framework. So welcome, Jean.
Thank you. You tell everyone I'm going to be a thrill to listen to. Well, I hope I can live up to your expectations. I'll do my best anyway. Good afternoon, everyone, and thank you for taking the time to listen. Emma Burnett obviously sends her apologies. I'll talk about the IPS competencies because that's been the main work of the EPDC in the last year. If people want more information on some of the other aspects that are going on with the committee, then please go to the website. There's all the information there on the educational strategy. There's the minutes from all the meetings. And we're now meeting with the education leads on a twice-yearly basis, and that's now been set up, which is good, to try and create some sort of sharing of information. The background to the competencies, we know that the ICNA produced competencies, the first set, in 2000. This followed on in 2004 with an update on the competencies. Then we had the European competencies in 2008. And ta-ra, we now have the 2010 IPS competencies. The purpose was to obviously try and assist all the infection prevention and control practitioners to increase existing sort of knowledge and skills. And, of course, we have that ultimate goal of safe, improved quality of care for patients, and the safety matter is on the big agenda for infection prevention. Moving on from the background slide to the progress to date, you will see that we had a working group towards the end of 2008 to give input into what these competencies should look like. We spent much of 2009 developing this framework. It's been circulated twice to all the IPS members, so you should have seen this, and we received comments. It also went to a wider group of stakeholders. We're now in the final draft. I think we're on the 8th. I think that was the actual final one. And I think one of the good things that we have is the five-country engagement, and this was a great development, and I was really pleased about this, and it's very important. And we're currently working with the Department of Health and the other five countries. We're looking at different ways of doing this. How can it be introduced? For example, maybe even considering flagship universities to involve into the education and to also have all that endorsement. The other important area is the EKSF, the Knowledge Skills Framework. The levels of the competencies are going to be mapped in with the Knowledge Skills Framework, and this is currently in process at the moment. Moving on to the next slide, the important considerations. We do understand that, you know, not one size is going to fit for all, but it's obviously they can be used, they can be tailored to fit in with your own sort of EKSFs and your own personal development plans. It will be applicable in all nations. It will be for NHS and non-NHS staff. It can be multi-professional. It's not only for nursing. And we're trying to take into account there's so much evolving around infection prevention and control responsibilities. Martin mentioned at the beginning about commissioning, and that could set off a whole another lot. We better not look at that one at the moment. Obviously, we've got the inclusion of some softer skills, and we've got the specialist knowledge and the skills in there, and making them sort of workable and user-friendly, not something that, you know, will sit on a shelf and that no one will use. Moving on to the next slide. What's next? So obviously, we're working with the individuals who are specialized in competencies and mapping this process, which is not an easy thing to do. And that's currently, you know, as I speak, that's in process at the moment. Getting the final document completed, looking at the endorsement with the higher education institutes and clinical practice, and launching at September conference, fingers crossed. And for the future, what we're looking to do is to develop an accreditation system in line with the competencies. As I said at the beginning, if there's any more information you want on the competencies or any other piece of information regarding the committee work, then please go to the website. Thank you for your time this afternoon, and I'll now hand you back to Martin. Thank you.
Thank you, Jean. I'd like to again pay tribute to Emma and the rest of the team for an enormous amount of work that's gone on this, and I know Tracy, our Vice President, has been a key mover in this area as well. Particularly pleased that the Departments of Health, are involved this time, because if we have that involvement and that engagement, we can start to shape the educational courses and shape the agenda and get some consistency in the standards of courses, so that everybody we know is going to be trained towards a minimum competence standard. And because I think previous sets of competencies were internally produced, not necessarily approved externally, and I think this is a key point for our future. Also for our future is the international aspect of our work, and I'm pleased now to introduce Tracy Cooper, who's going to be talking about our international collaborations. And Tracy, as you know, is IPS Vice President and succeeds me in September. So welcome, Tracy.
Thank you, Martin. Hello, everybody. It's really good to be on another IPS Voices teleclass, and I do hope you're finding it as useful as I am, despite being as linked with the work programs that are going on as I am. I think it's so helpful to stand back and just hear the breadth and depth of work that's happening. To move on then, the international collaborations. The IPS is very much a society that is beyond the countries where we first started, and we have a global membership with members across all continents in the globe. So if I move you on from the pretty picture, and we think about collaboration internationally, we have, as many members will know, a very long history of collaboration, particularly with APIC and with CHICA, and the collaboration we have with Paul and the teleclass is one of the products of some of that collaboration with those societies. And we also have a strong collaboration with IFIC, and we are members of IFIC. That collaboration continues, and some examples are things like support for each other's conferences, which we do routinely each year, and which helps us to understand other societies' needs and to develop joint working. A piece of work which I think is developing currently for 2010 is some joint work which I hope APIC and CHICA will be able to do to support IFIC as part of the International Infection Prevention Week. And for those that haven't got it in their diary yet, that is the 17th to the 23rd of October 2010. We also have some dialogue and discussion to support journal development, and there is a regular dialogue between our own editorial board and the editorial board and the editor of the AJIC as well, so the strong cross-Atlantic collaboration there, and as I've mentioned, support for joint IFIC initiatives. So we've got a long history and a long background of doing that kind of work. If I move you on now to the next slide. What we've had increasingly developing over the last 18 months, and this is extremely exciting, is an emerging European collaboration. And prior to 2009, there really was no Europe-wide network that existed specifically for infection prevention and control. A meeting of interested societies was held, and the output of that is what's known as the Berlin Declaration, which was published in our journal, the Journal of Infection Prevention, in 2009. And that declaration was an agreement supported by many societies across Europe, including IPS, and essentially confirmed our will and our want to work together to develop and improve infection prevention for patients and the public across the whole of Europe. I'm pleased to tell you that over the last year, as part of the development of that network, IPS has become a member of the coordinating group. And that network brings with it a whole variety of benefits and opportunities, in addition to some of the more formal opportunities. Just having the collaboration with people means we have early sight of programs of work that are coming within Europe that are of interest to us and potentially of interest and use to our members. And one example of that I would give you is there is discussion at the moment about a development of a European prevalence survey on HCAI, which the European Centre for Disease Control is looking to run in the next couple of years. So IPS hopes through the European network and collaboration we have to be actively involved in shaping the structure for that. If I move you on to the next slide. So as I said, the collaboration is gradually becoming more formal, and there's a proposal currently on the table for the network to become a legal entity and effectively become a society of societies. IPS board are currently reviewing that proposal, and as Martin has already mentioned, we have our IPS board meeting on Friday, followed by the consultative committee on Saturday, and the board will be reviewing the proposal on Friday. And we will look, as we do with everything, to identify what's the best option for IPS participation to benefit our members. So we'll be giving that consideration this week. I think the key thing for members to know is that IPS is absolutely committed to continuing with the working and the collaboration we have with the other European societies, because we're already seeing benefits from networking across the issues. And moving you on to the next slide and the benefits to date, I've mentioned the ECDC already. ECDC regularly issues tenders for programs of work, and that's work on patient safety, which includes infection. And IPS is part of a subgroup of societies from the European network who were successful in putting a proposal together. So IPS is actively involved currently in a piece of work on training needs assessment for infection control across Europe. And all countries will be participating in that. The particular benefit, I think, for IPS members to that work is that the European Union is hoping and aiming that that work will form the basis for some core curriculum and core competency for specialist practitioners. And I think because the work that the development group is doing is very much based on the IPSI, the infection improving patient safety in Europe competencies that were done several years ago. And the IPS has based our own competency review on those same IPSI competencies. It actually ties those pieces of work together quite well. And certainly the way we believe things will develop within Europe means that the IPS competencies will be a useful tool for our members to be well placed as future European directives and European guidance on curriculum and competency comes out. So I think for me this is an exciting piece of work where benefits to our members will become really apparent over the next few years, and I see more programs such as that coming along, which IPS will continue to actively try and work to participate in for the benefit of all of our members and, of course, the benefit of our patients. So that was a bit of a canter through international collaboration and where we've got to date. The other thing I should just add is that by the nature of this work, the IPS is also involved in that collaborative working with other UK societies. So within the European network, we have HIS, for example, who are also active members of the network, and we're participating with them on those European issues in addition to the societies that are across a piece of water. So, Martin, I'm going to stop there, and I'm going to hand back over to you now.
Thank you very much, Tracy. Also on the international front, members might like to know that this year we decided to sponsor an overseas delegate from a developing country to come to our conference. They were asked on how they were going to go and back and disseminate information, and we're delighted that this year the overseas delegate award has gone to Dr. Brahma Putrajadi from Indonesia, who's coming to join us in Bournemouth, and he's undertaken to disseminate the information through his work with the Indonesian government. So what comes out at our conference will be influencing policy and practice in other parts of the world as well. And our role in IFIC as well, this year we decided to sponsor a delegate and somebody to present at IFIC from a developing country as well. For those of you who don't know very much about the International Federation and Infection Control, it's again a society of societies which comes together annually to hold a meeting held in a developing nation in order to be able to promote, you know, high quality education in the developing countries. And this year, as I said, we'll be sponsoring a speaker from a country that otherwise wouldn't be able to support their attendance at the meeting in Cape Town. So that's really quite, I think it's a good thing to do. I think that's something that our ethos has always been around education, and I think that's very important. If we can move on to our last slide. In summing up, I know that many of you may be feeling that it's some things that we're working on have taken some time. I think now you'll get some idea of the vast amount of work that's gone into getting us to where we are with all of the various projects we've gone on, especially bear in mind that all of us have full-time employment. I mean, people outside the organisation think that the Society has full-time officers and that's all we do, and I'm afraid we don't. We all have full-time day jobs, and trying to juggle IPS work, evenings, weekends, and the board meetings and consultative committee, there's a lot of time commitment taken up. And one thing we are looking at is to try and ease the burden on board members and others within the society by maybe beefing up our administrative support and formalising that a little bit more, especially now that we're on a much more sound financial footing following the conference last year and the projections for this year. So I think that will really benefit us going forward. It will certainly benefit the post holders because, as I'm sure all of you have noticed, our workload over the last couple of years has hardly got any less. I don't see it getting any less in the future, which is a good thing, as the infection prevention really hits the agendas in every country, but we have to support our people who are running the society, otherwise it's going to become incredibly more challenging for us. And on that note, I would ask all of you to consider how much involvement you might be able to give to the society. Branches, some of them struggle to get people volunteer for the branch roles. What I would say is club together with a few people and buddy up so that you have a couple of people possibly even sharing some of the roles, maybe not the coordinator role, but some of the other roles. Because if there are many people sharing the burden, then actually it becomes an awful lot less. Now, as I said in the last slide, the society are the sum of its members, not just a part of it. And this year we've got some very key roles that you'll see a call for applications in the near future. We'll be looking for a new vice president come in September as Tracy takes over my role. Phil Pugh finishes his term of office secretary, and Jill Manojlovic takes over from Phil. We're going to be looking for a deputy to David Tucker, our treasurer, who will shadow David for the next 2 years and then take over as treasurer. And Judith Storr will be completing her term as ordinary member on the board. And that's a chance for somebody who hasn't actually got a formal role within society, who sits there and they're really to give us checks and balances on the board. So I would ask people to consider if they might be able to think about putting themselves forward for one of those roles, because I'd really like to see some new blood. What unfortunately happens is that people who have been active in the society for some time, rather than see a post fall vacant because we've got limited support for it, they say, well, okay, well, we'll take it on. And then I hear from the rest of people, well, it's always the same people. And we really do need new blood to bring new and fresh ideas to keep the society move forward, because if we don't move forward, then we stand still and, to some extent, we go backwards. Can I also put out a plea to people to support your local branch? Branches are an important part of our structure, and it's what makes us a little bit different. It's where people can come together for peer group support and where we can get free education. I think we have to do a little bit of tinkering with the structuring of that free education so that people will see the benefit of it. We're currently working up a proposal for institutional membership where healthcare provider organisations will be able to join a certain number of members, and as a key part of that, it will be that all of those members can get free education, high quality education on infection prevention and control as part of the benefit of that membership. I think organisations will value that. I think members will probably value it as well, because it may well mean that they don't have to pay their own individual subs as well, and I know that will go down very well. We need to make sure the education we're providing is of an excellent standard in order to further agenda. It's what we set ourselves up to do, and it's what we need to keep on doing, because there are a lot of people coming into the field who haven't really got the background in infection prevention control. It's an opportunity to get hold of people at that point. Also, at the branch meetings, you'll still get the same level of peer group support that we always gave each other. And I think that's become self-evident with the huge amount of interest I got when I sent out that email call for people who might be interested in a commissioning group, I had about 80 people straight away come back to me, who would value the peer group support of people, people working in a similar situation, which they're unfamiliar, where they can phone a friend, if you like. And I certainly remember when I started in infection prevention and control, I was the only person in the organisation. You needed people in the organisations around you to give you that experience. And I'm really grateful to people who did that for me in the past, and we need to share that again in the future. So we're coming to the end now. I'd like to give my personal thanks to Heather, Karen, Pat, Jean, Tracy for contributing. I think you'll see that there, as I said before, there's quite a lot of interesting work going on. A couple of key things I put out. You've seen a little glimpse of the tools. When you actually sit there and look at the slides, you'll see just how comprehensive they are and what you'll be able to do with them. And a phone call to your branch's IT member probably will clear up any other questions for you, but you can always feed questions to us through your branch coordinators anyway. I particularly like the idea of the photo surveillance section in the journal, although I wouldn't hope that some of the photographs taken at the conference dinner wouldn't make it into the journal pages with an associated commentary. Just on the point of conference, please don't forget to highlight conference to your medical colleagues. Last year we had over 30 microbiologists turn up, which was absolutely excellent. There are 16 CPD points available this year. There are big microbiologist teams out there now. And there is now an opportunity for them to go to another high-quality meeting. And I know certainly the feedback we got from the medical colleagues who came last year was absolutely excellent. So please don't forget those people and the trainees working within those teams when you're highlighting conference to other people. Without further ado, I think I'm going to hand back to Paul Weber with, again, our thanks for hosting this, Paul, and making this possible. It's a great opportunity for us to talk directly to our members. And if you're hearing this on UK Gold or something later on, I hope that you found it of value. And we'd really like to have some feedback to your branches about how you think the teleclass went. So back to you, Paul. Thank you.
Martin, thank you very much. Thank you to all of you who participated today, Martin, and all of the rest of the participants. Thank you very much. And if you registered and listened either live or by recording, thank you. You helped make this teleclass education program work. In the UK, it is run by volunteers Maria Benalek, Debbie King, and Lauren Tu. Again, thank you all, and I hope you have a grand day. Goodbye.